Part 8. The Looking Glass. The bravest are surely those who have the clearest vision of what is before them, glory and danger alike, and yet, notwithstanding, go out to meet it. Thucydides. G-2. Intersection, Messenger Mothership. When the flash subsided and the living room was replaced by the interior of a spacecraft so large it could only be one of the messenger's gate-crossing motherships, Dan, Emma, and Tara were all focused on one thing. Piper.
Please, no go,
the baby said, startling Emma in particular with her increasingly quick linguistic improvements in putting together new words and old to form impressively clear statements. They all laughed. Glad to see she was okay, despite never having doubted it. The trip wouldn't have happened if they had been, and also amused by the fact that the first thing she thought worthy of commenting on about this incredible spaceship was that Leisha was indeed inside it with her. Melly, the doctor who had approached Dan and New Birchwood with the kind offer to perform the upcoming diagnostic tests, walked forward with a warm expression absent of anything so overt or human as a smile.
You must be Emma,
she said, instantly going for a hug, like the kind she had received from Tara. Emma reciprocated.
And you must be Piper,
Melly continued. Immediately, the baby began to giggle. Within a few seconds, her hands were reaching up for Melly to take her. Emma handed her over, delighted by how easily things had started.
This is a very happy child,
the doctor stated, her expression one of focus.
Melly is a powerful empath, Leisha explained. She can sense far more than thoughts, conscious or otherwise.
Holding Piper at arm's length, Melly studied her expression very closely.
My experience of diagnosing or treating human infants began a few minutes ago,
Melly admitted.
But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is a remarkable child with a remarkable brain. Her perception is greater than mine. Dan? Emma, Tara, this is not guesswork. I feel her reading my soul more deeply than I can read hers, and I have been raised as an empath since birth. I have been raised with technologies provided by those we now know as architects, but whose machines I considered elders, to feel what others feel and to see what others are beneath their shallow waters of reactive thought. What I know is that this child has a power that cannot be taught. I have more conclusions to share, but I would like to conduct some objective tests, non-invasively, if you would all be so kind as to follow me.
When Melly then tried to hand Piper back to Emma, the baby gripped onto her alien doctor like a monkey to a tree.
Someone doesn't want to let go of her new friend,
Emma said. Everyone laughed, except for Melly.
I have never been read like this in my life,
she said, deadpan.
Emma, Dan, I sense that you have no idea of how remarkable your child truly is. I almost feel overwhelmed. These tests are going to be extremely illuminating.
Further into the spacecraft, through a door Dan had never previously been permitted to pass, Melly carried Piper until the group reached an examination room. Like so much they had seen on New Kerguelen, some of it looked remarkably human. As Dan had been forced to consider during his first visit to the alien world, this made sense. After all, the physiological similarities between two bipedal species of roughly the same size who inhabit worlds with essentially identical levels of gravity would always naturally result in things like seating benches and table-like surfaces looking somewhat similar.
Emma, I will not hurt Piper in any way, nor take her out of your sight for even a second.
Melly reassured her, but by now she was not at all concerned about such things. Melly exuded a kindness and warmth like no one Emma had previously encountered, and the alien's very presence made her feel at peace.
I will also need the three of you to participate in some tests, but again, you will not be hurt either.
Everyone assented. For the next hour or so, during which time Piper didn't protest or cry even once, Melly conducted a multitude of observational tests. She hooked Piper and the adults up to various devices and interfaces using cables connected to helmets or familiar patches, sometimes asking questions while the readings were taken, and sometimes presenting oral or visual stimuli. On occasion, these were combined, such as when Melly instructed the adult subjects to mimic certain facial expressions as closely as possible and took care to record how Piper and the other adults reacted. As an empath herself, Melly gathered a lot of observational data just by paying attention and deeply reading her subjects. The devices were more objective in their work, measuring brain activity in a way she couldn't, but all of that only served to add to her own findings rather than supersede them. By the end, she was ready to share her thoughts.
"The most precise finding we have made today," Melly began, once back in the central area where the visit began, "is that Piper has a remarkably strong empathic connection to you, Dan. Only you."
Everyone considered these words. "And by empathic," Dan probed.
"She can sense your feelings, but on a far deeper level than the limits of your language allow me to explain. She has an empathic connection to me and is attempting to strengthen that, but she is unable to read Leisha, just as she is unable to read either of you, Emma and Tara. I understand her attempts to read me, since one empath senses another, but not Dan, because Dan, your levels of emotional acuity, in terms of knowing what others are feeling based on standard supraliminal cues, are far lower than those of Emma or Tara, both of whom are on what I would consider the standard baseline."
This last part was hardly news. Dan had, after all, once been misdiagnosed with schizotypal personality disorder by a human doctor who overextrapolated based on similar conclusions, but the earlier parts about Piper merited much attention and certainly received it.
"I can confirm, however, that Piper has no uplift powers at all,"
Melly said, no inch of doubt in the words.
"No telepathy at all, uplifted or inherited, and similarly, no telekinesis at all. What your child does have is a very active mind, literally. I have seen neurological activity levels like none before, even among the geniuses of our kind. This is not an affliction."
"But she knew when Leisha appeared, thousands of miles away," Emma said.
"Where does that come from?"
"Her connection to Dan,"
Melly explained.
"The exact mechanism I don't yet know. But Emma, please do not be mistaken or disappointed when I talk of connections. She has a stronger level of affectionate attachment for you than for Dan. And Tara, as a non-parent, the affectionate attachment Piper has for you is an extraordinarily high level."
"Clever girl,"
Tara said, smiling and bringing a rare burst of vocal laughter from her older sister. "But she is attached to me too?" Dan said, inflecting it into a question without explicitly stating it as such. Emma took hold of his hand.
"Of course she is."
"Melly has the data," he said, staying focused on her. "Don't you?"
"And it is perfectly standard,"
the doctor said.
"I am using reference data from our kind, admittedly, but at this age, a child's attachment to the mother will always be stronger, unless some clear factor causes an exception."
Dan nodded. "I get it."
"But Melly,"
Emma said, her demeanor changing as the crux of the matter could no longer be avoided.
"What do we do? How do we fix this?"
Although unsurprised by this question, having known it was the reason for Dan's keenness to be here, and having read the concern as though it was written on their faces, Melly took several seconds to answer.
"There is nothing to fix,"
she insisted.
"Piper is a child like no other, with a remarkable power that could manifest in beautiful ways, and one which I would never forgive myself for doing anything to diminish."
"I don't think you understand," Emma replied.
"If people on Earth ever find out—" "I feel your fear,"
Melly interrupted,
"and I know where it's coming from. But please, believe me, this is an intelligent child, worthy of trust and deserving of room to grow. By the time she is old enough to say complex things that could bring problems if heard by the wrong ears, which I sense is a chief concern, she will be more than old enough to know not to say those things."
It was Emma's turn to hesitate.
"So there's nothing you can do?" Or there's nothing you will do?
There are areas of her brain where we could invasively intervene to limit the unusual levels of activity we've detected,
Melly said, idiosyncratically using the royal we, despite having carried out every test alone and indeed never even having been joined by an assistant.
But to risk damaging the child's remarkable intellect and curiosity for the sake of limiting her gift of empathic ability out of fears which are themselves overblown.
No, nothing invasive, Emma said. But is there no way to turn off these empathic powers like we did with the telepathic and telekinetic uplift powers, if we wanted to?
Inherited telepathy is a curse I'm glad she is rid of, the doctor replied. But an empathic ability of the kind Piper possesses is a gift you will come to be grateful for. Trust me, I am not guessing. I will be more than willing to monitor Piper closely and test her as often as you wish in whichever ways you desire. But her future is bright,
Melly promised.
Thank you,
Emma said, exhaling deeply as though something had clicked in her mind.
And I trust you completely. I know I can't read you like you can read us, but I can feel something. You give off an aura of goodness. Thank you,
Melly replied, touched by the kind words.
So we're definitely just leaving her like this? Tara asked, clearly fully approving.
It's not a power in the bad way we used to talk about her old powers. If she can read people and make them as comfortable as Melly makes us all feel, that really is a gift. And if trying to remove it risks making her less unusually bright and inquisitive, we can't even think about doing that.
Dan agreed just as strongly. But please, don't feel like you've wasted our time, he smiled at Melly. Just because this didn't go how we thought we wanted it to, with you connecting some device that made her normal again, that doesn't mean it didn't work out. Now we know how special she is, and we also know that her connection is only to me, so not something anyone else will ever pick up on. We also know we have you to help us out if we ever need anything.
You do, Melly said. Just as we have you, Dan. And with that in mind, since we are done for now, Leisha?
Absolutely,
her fellow alien said, having been a quiet and approving observer through the myriad of tests and then the concluding conversations.
Emma, I will take you and Piper home, then return immediately to bring the others to New Kerguelen. I am glad my promise to do everything in my power to ensure Piper lives a long and happy life seems like it may require less input than we thought. But in taking the others through the sanctuary gate, I feel confident that I will deliver peace on our planet of a kind that enables further cooperation and engagement to make all of our lives long and happy.
How are you guys so nice when the architects were so not?
Tara sighed rhetorically. Because good trumps evil, Dan answered on his behalf. Isn't that right? Leisha looked at his human friend and nodded, ready to transport Emma and Piper back home. Every single time, he said. Emma said her goodbyes, warm but deliberately brief so as to avoid emotion. She spent longer with Melly than Dan or Tara, unsure when she'd see the doctor again, but unwilling to entertain the notion that her husband and sister wouldn't be back in Birchwood within a few more hours at most.
Goodbye, Piper,
Melly said, sending her first ever smile the baby's way. Piper smiled back.
Please go?
She then asked, looking across at the other alien. He smiled widely and gave her a small nod before engaging the flash.
Lise, go.